Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
We're back. Did you miss us?
I missed you.
Thanks, Francis. So this is the Wild Ones podcast, the show where we chat about bike stuff. It's episode 36. I'm Jimmy. I'm here with producer Emily, and Francis is back in the room.
Ooh.
He's like the new Elvis.
What?
Well, you're back. No, what's the Elvis thing? Elvis has left the
building.
He leaves buildings.
You're the anti-Elvis.
Yeah, but he's in the building before he leaves them.
I assume he was, yeah.
So what's been going on?
I've been away for a long time. How long have I been away? 6 weeks? 7 weeks?
Ages.
No, I had a great time. Been spending some time with my family because my dad's unwell at the moment. So I'm just spending lots of time together. And I got married. That was also good.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I gave you a secret mission before you left to make friends with Tom Hanks. Did you succeed?
No. I didn't meet any celebrities. We were in Los Angeles for the audience at home. However, my dad did. He had breakfast with Arnie.
Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yes.
The Arnie.
And when I say with, I mean kind of sat near him at breakfast in a hotel. But close enough to see what he ate for breakfast. 2 boiled eggs.
Is that it?
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
It's a high protein diet, isn't it?
Do you think that's just his like outward breakfast and actually he's just like scoffing protein bars all the time?
Well, you were telling me earlier he eats a copious amount of salmon.
Well, yeah, that was based on a story which was heard word of mouth from about 8 years ago when he was promoting veganism.
Salmon's not vegan.
This was while I was working at Lab Bible. They do a format that's about eating different foods from around the world. And I don't know whether the production team got the wrong end of the stick, but they were pretty convinced that Arnie was vegan. I think he'd said something like, "I'm practically vegan." So they'd panicked and gone out and got loads of vegan versions of food for this show they were about to do with him. But then they took him out for dinner the night before and he apparently ordered like a whole salmon. And they were like, okay, fine, he's clearly not vegan.
A whole salmon, a jug of whiskey and a cigar. Probably.
I don't think that. No.
Cowboy boots, almost definitely. He wears he's got like a massive collection of cowboy boots.
Does he?
Yeah.
Is that what he wears when he's Terminator?
Probably.
Hmm.
I want your boots.
Clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle.
Yeah,
he even lists boots in there, specifically the boots.
But not necessarily cowboy boots, because there's also motorcycle boots.
He doesn't count boots as clothes.
Should we move on to some news?
Let's do it.
So, do you remember last year that we talked about the beef between Zwift and Wahoo?
Yes.
Jesus
Christ. I've been in the podcast in a while, right? I forgot I was supposed to respond. I was enjoying my heated seat.
So, Wahoo launched legal action against Zwift in 2022, claiming the Zwift Hub Turbo Trainer was a ripoff of the Kicker Core. The case was then mysteriously dropped with little information about what would happen next. Well, we finally know the answer, because the brands have now just joined forces to release the Wahoo Kicker Core Zwift 1. Catchy name. It's basically a kicker core with a Zwift cog, which is essentially a single sprocket that allows virtual shifting. Zwift is now selling the trainer on its website along with Wahoo's full range of turbos.
I've got a question. You were on a call, a top secret call with Zwift, weren't you?
Yep.
For the PR stuff about this cog thing.
Yep.
How does the cog, does it connect to whatever shifting system you have? Or does it have a separate like button thing you put on your handlebars? Can you remember?
It has a separate button you put on your handlebars.
Okay.
It's one gear that when you press it, it changes the resistance rather than it moving a mech. So it like virtually changes resistance.
Yeah.
It's that.
Inside the turbo trainer somehow.
Yeah.
Like erg mode. It just uses erg mode to like boop, doop, doop, but in stages.
Yeah.
So it does work with any bike.
I think that's the idea of it, that you can just chuck any bike on and it'll work. So if you've got different types of bikes. I think that thing, it was like their official media like launch information. I think that was like September. Maybe October, September, October, and there was zero mention of Wahoo. They were just like, you know, we've got this new turbo and this new thing and blah, 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 blah. So either, well, I'm assuming it was heavily embargoed or they just didn't know at that point, which is quite interesting.
The idea of Zwift not only having a Wahoo collab trainer, but also selling the full range of turbos on their website might not seem like a big deal, but Zwift, I remember we had a meeting with Zwift maybe like 10 years ago or something. And their whole principle was about being hardware agnostic, for a better term, because they don't want to piss off Garmin by going Wahoo heavy, and they don't want to piss off Wahoo by going Garmin heavy and all the other turbo trainers that are coming up. And that was always the thing, wasn't it?
But to be fair, though, I guess that's a long time ago in their trajectory. But
since then, they had plans for a whole bike you could buy, a Zwift bike. And there was like those blueprint, production images, you know, pre-production mock-ups of this weird bike that you could have in your house.
But them having their own products doesn't alienate the industry. Them having such a strong tie to Wahoo, you know, like if I was Garmin, I would be going like, well, I don't really want to be promoting Zwift because promoting Wahoo.
Exactly.
It'd be interesting to see what happens to the landscape, because it feels like it's going to force the other trainer manufacturers to look at alternative things or perhaps eventually. I can't imagine anyone's going to make any quick brash moves because it just doesn't make sense to, because Zwift have got the monopoly on digital training.
It might be, and this is speculation, it might be that in the future, you know, if you have a Wahoo, you tend to go with Zwift. If you have a Tax, you might go with a different sort of training platform. It might become a lot more split, because we've seen other training platforms start to bubble up. Nothing's competed with Zwift yet, but it might destabilize Zwift a little bit.
You can't change from Zwift though once you've got level 30. Mm-hmm.
True.
You're gonna throw that all away, start from scratch? No.
I did have a go on the Tax app the other day, and it was a lot better than I was expecting it to be. I just kind of assumed that all software that wasn't Zwift was just going to be absolutely junk. I think it might even use like Google Maps, so I think you can kind of ride a Google Map route. I've probably got that wrong, but there was definitely a thing I was looking at, and you were riding along the promenade in, I think, Barcelona, and there's just like people with faces blurred out.
Oh, maybe they have to blur the faces.
Or maybe it's not Google Maps. Maybe they actually just record it.
But like the faster you ride, the faster the video goes. So if you're really, if you're super slow, then everyone's walking in slow motion next to you. I've done a climb.
Yeah. So I did a bit more digging into Zwift and the position that they're in. So what I found out is the source of this information is mostly from Zwift Insider, which is independently owned and operated from Zwift. In March 2020, they laid off a load of execs. May 22, they laid off 150 staff, which was 20% of the workforce, and that was because they were pausing development on their hardware. Then March last year, they laid off 80 staff, mostly in the marketing and creative departments, and had a big executive reshuffle, brought in some execs from Amazon. Then they have in the last few days, also announced that they're laying off another batch of people. DC Rainmaker claims that virus source, there's going to be over 100 redundancies coming in the next couple of weeks.
I just realized I did see a celebrity in LA. God's sake. Eric Min.
Did you?
Yeah.
You should have asked him about this then.
We were on a ride. I was with Lucy. She's waving. And I was like, oh, no. I just waved. Didn't know who it was. And she goes, that was Eric Min. I've never met him before. We follow each other though.
Well, at least this interruption was relevant.
Yeah. Same sort of level as Arnie in celeb status?
Well, only in the cycling world.
Mm. Eric Min is the CEO of Zwift.
Yeah.
Just for context. Mm-hmm. I just had to Google that. I didn't know who you were talking about.
So Zwift have raised $620 million of investment over the years. Their last round was in 2020, which presumably was to push the hardware stuff. They have not been profitable. They have a valuation of $1 billion. There's a few random sources on the internet which suggest that their revenue is around 100 million, but that could just be completely made up. So I think there's one of two things happening at the minute at Zwift. Either they're setting up for an IPO, so essentially floating the company on the stock market to try and recover some money for their investors. Presumably, they've got a load of VC investors which are going like, well, we've given you 620 million. When do we get our 4 billion back? I actually think this is unlikely. I think actually what is happening is they are running out of money, or they're running out of runway, as it's referred to, which is essentially their investment capital, and they are leaning up the business to either bring in some more investment or to ultimately push their runway out further. It's very typical in tech for them to get a bucket ton of investment, and it's you basically burn it until you and hope that you can turn the business profitable and then float, which they are yet to do. So I think it's actually quite an interesting period for Zwift, because we are either going to find that they are going to do everything they can to massively expand so that they start turning a profit, or we might find that they start to struggle. It'd be interesting to see what happens.
Speaking of trainers, did you see that Peloton is struggling?
Good.
Yeah. And it's I saw a thing on Cycling Weekly. It said, uncertain future for Peloton as share price plummets. And the quote they picked out from Peloton's CEO is, if we're not failing, we're not being aggressive enough. And that is outrageous, that is some spin, isn't it? That is a way of turning a negative into a positive.
So Zwift probably won't want to talk about it or talk about the comparison externally because how bad Peloton's share price has plummeted over the last, I think, 18 months. But essentially, they are in the same space. Zwift and Peloton are the same structure. They're trying to be the same thing. It's probably why Zwift got a load of money for hardware. Was the industry was going like, right, so you've got really good software that you're nailing. Why wouldn't you also sell a bike product to go along with it? Peloton are a great example of it. I think Peloton's valuation is still in the billions.
Yeah,
it's still more than Zwift's valuation. Because I think they do have a decent revenue because they're selling a lot of products and they're capturing a lot of subscriptions. Granted, it's fallen off, but they are ultimately the model that Zwift are hoping to emulate, minus the 95 or 97% of share price drop off.
I've got a question.
Yep.
If Peloton went bust,
yep,
or if they decided they just didn't want to carry on, mm-hmm, would everyone's Peloton bike stop working?
No, they would have a very expensive basic spinning bike that they could still use.
You still ride on it, but it just doesn't give you any.
But it isn't smart.
No, it's exactly. That's what I mean.
It's a hand.
You're relying on the software to. Oh, it's a hand. It's a twisting thing like a spin bike.
As far as I'm aware, a Peloton bike is a bog standard spinning bike with a hand controlled resistance
and a screen on it.
But what you're really paying for is the access to live training sessions, which you can just, quite often they have them at gyms, especially in London. Every gym that I used in London had these kind of spinning classes where you've got an instructor, high energy instructor, which is basically going, turn it up to 8, get out of the saddle. You know, I've done some of those sessions. They mess you up. They're hard. They're not comparable to riding a bike.
Kim,
thing.
Do you know Kim Nonstop?
I know who she is, yeah.
Yeah, so she used to race Red Hook and stuff back in the day. And she got a job, I think it's for Apple. And she does, so you subscribe to some sort of, I think it may be Apple TV. It comes with Apple TV. And she is the person that every week, a couple of times a week, you get a new video of her hosting a spin class. And it's like up to date. So she has a full-time job doing those spins and other stuff. And then every time you log in, because you got a subscription, it's a new workout, relevant, you know, it's, you're seeing the same person. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I subscribe to that.
Do you?
I did. I stopped.
So you could go on you go on one of the taxis.
Yeah.
And watch Kim Nonstop.
Yeah, I was doing, they do like Pilates and yoga and
what's
stuff.
What's the service? Is it Apple TV?
It's
sports.
Apple Health Plus, I think it's called, something like that.
I wonder how many she does. I went for a ride with her after not seeing her for a long time. She lives in Los Angeles and she was like, oh, I'm not riding very much at the moment. So I was like, okay, it'll be nice and chill. She's not riding outside outdoors. Very much at the moment. She's so strong because it's just hours upon hours of like riding flat out,
yeah,
shouting at people.
Yeah. So in other news, oh, I think I've gone too far. I
have. When are we launching Cade Media Plus, where we charge people an introductory offer of £6 for live streams of Jimmy's face, where you wear some sort of GoPro that constantly points at you and it's 24-hour live stream?
24-hour?
Yeah.
What's the purpose?
I don't know. People pay money and they can watch everything Jimmy does, but only his face.
Oh.
So next up, charging your electronic shifters might be about to get a whole lot easier. We've just found out SRAM has had a patent. Oh, people go nuts at me for the way I say patent.
Yeah.
Patent.
Patent.
Patent. Patent?
Patent.
I'm going to stick with it.
Patent.
We found out SRAM have had a patent granted for a solar panel that could connect to your frame, water bottle or mudguard and charge your batteries. The system wouldn't charge the component directly. Instead, it's designed to charge a spare battery for a derailleur or dropper post. So when you run out of juice, you swap the batteries over.
Good.
So I had some thoughts about this. And I searched this morning, how long does a SRAM battery last? And they claim that it lasts for 60 hours of riding. So in what scenario would you need a spare battery on a ride? And pretty much the only thing I can think of is off-grid bike packing.
No, because 60 hours sounds great. But what if you have multiple bikes and you leave them and the battery goes down? The battery drains without you using it. So I'm constantly having to remember. I like set alarms if I remember the day before. I need to make sure I put this battery on charge. If we have a fresh battery, if we're going out right. I've run out of battery loads with SRAM.
So you...
Whereas Di2, never. Because it lasts a million times longer.
But surely you'd be better off getting one of those 4-block battery chargers and either just... when you finish a ride or every now and again, you just bang them in there or having a couple of extra batteries just living there. There's surely not a scenario where you're out and you go, oh, there's my 60 hours up. Because even on a bikepacking trip, you just charge every couple of days.
There are some people in this world that will, no matter what solutions they put in place to stop it from happening, will forget to charge their batteries and then they'll end up out on a ride and it'll...
Me.
Yeah, Lawrence... Lawrence has done a Premier calendar with a battery pack in his pocket connected to his Di2.
but it
just happens. It's still going to happen. Some people just are not organized in that way. Our brains don't work in that way. Sorry.
So I was actually thinking I was thinking that maybe this is more than it appears to be.
Ooh.
And I was thinking that maybe it is going to be more of a battery pack. So essentially, you solar charge a battery, which you can chuck into a dropper or a mech, but maybe there's going to be the option of plugging something into it so that you could charge your light whilst you're bikepacking or your head unit. So maybe it is actually going to be more. Because it feels to me like if the only thing it does is allow me to switch out a battery into one of my mechs or a dropper post, then it's nearly redundant. It's so niche. It's like so unbelievably niche. You would get one because you'd be like, well, I always get it. And then you'd probably forget to put the mug guard on. You'd have to get one for every bike.
I'm not going to put a mug guard on my bike either.
So it'd have to be a bottle.
It's extra stuff. No extra stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. If you're bike packing, like you were saying, and you're serious about it, people run dynamos, which are really good. I know this is not overrated, underrated, but I think they're underrated. Because they don't really give you much more drag, especially in a situation where you're bike packing, you're not racing, you know. And still, the ultra races use dynamos.
Yeah.
And you've got your lights plugged in, you've got your, you can charge things, whatever you want. You can just plug it in with a normal cable, like iPhone, dynamo thing.
I'm hoping you listen to the Wild Ones podcast whilst you're away. And I don't want to know the answer, we're just going to assume that you did. You'll probably remember that Nick and I had a conversation about our like perfect winter bike. And I want to build a winter bike that has dynamos and it's just permanently set up with front bike, front light, rear light, head unit, just all just like wired in and just runs off a dynamo. I think that'd be sick. I do like dynamos.
Yeah, I love that bit of the podcast.
I hope that they are going to make it something that charges a battery, and then that battery can also act as a battery pack. But I don't think it would have enough charge, but we'll just negate that.
That's the other problem. It would take so long to get even one SRAM battery's worth of charge. It's hours and hours and hours and hours and hours.
60 hours.
60 hours. Is that what you said earlier?
Yeah, well, that's how much one lasts. So as long as... It's
yeah.
So in other news, women's pro cycling is having what some people are calling its Le Monde moment. So what does that actually mean? Basically, it's been reported that pro rider Demi Vollering, who is one of the best riders in the world right now, has just been offered a reported €1 million per year to join UAE team ADQ. Last year, she won the Tour de France Femme, Strade Bianca, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, Tour de Romandie, the Dutch National Road Race Champs, and more. That was a massive tongue twister for me there.
Nice.
This new offer from UAE team ADQ is being called a Le Monde moment for women's cycling because Greg LeMond was famously the first pro cyclist to get paid $1 million by his team back in the 80s. It is quite wild that was the 80s.
where $1 million was, what does it say, euros? $1 million whatevers was significantly more than $1 million now.
Yeah.
That was a lot of money.
So it's a pivotal moment for the sport and is a promising sign for the future. One of her teammates was questioned about it during a press conference last week. She acknowledged that Demi was absolutely worth it, but also made the point that the distribution of the money within the peloton is just as important, if not more important, than the growth of the top riders' salaries. It is great that finally that side, the women's side of cycling, is growing and gives a much better platform and career for people to get into.
What a cool thing to look up to.
Yeah, I know.
For young girls.
100%.
And it's like, oh, that's a legit, like, I could be, not only can you have a career, but you can make it.
You're so right. I feel like when I was, as a young kid, I was so, so into sport.
Mm.
I was obsessed with Sunderland football team. I used to live and breathe in my full Sunderland kit. But there really wasn't, I feel like there wasn't women's sports, not on TV.
So women's football is right now is like
it's
buzzing,
massive.
Right?
It's huge, okay. Yeah. And like they're selling out games and, you know, the women's World Cup and that kind of thing, which I watch now, but I don't think that wasn't ever televised. That wasn't really a women and girls growing up now, as you say, just have such a different perspective and it's exciting, isn't it? And that trickles through, that has an effect in, you know, decades time.
It's literally how it grows, isn't it? Because those people will be 20.
Yeah.
And they'll be really into sport and that's great.
But it also creates more of a realistic proposition. Because historically, like, you know, if you wanted to be a professional women's cyclist, you had to go, well, I know I'm going to make basically nothing to be able to do it.
It's a gamble, isn't it?
Well, it's more than a gamble. Like, even if you're at the top end, you're probably there because you found a way to be able to make it work financially. Mm-hmm. Whereas it having money in the sport and prize money and salaries that are actually worthy of the amount of effort that goes into it, then it gives you a chance of actually going, well, you know, I'm not realistically going to be the best in the world, but if I'm one of the top 50, top 100 female cyclists of all time or of the year, then I'm going to make enough money that actually makes it worth all of the effort.
It's definitely picking up pace now. It's not a linear growth at all, is it? It's just getting faster and faster. It's picking up momentum.
Mm.
What other graph types do you know? Stick with that one then. Not linear.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now on to our big question. I feel like we've covered loads before we've got here. This is going to be a hench boy.
I feel like we've only done 5 minutes.
What the hell is the Enhanced Games and is it a good idea?
Oh, geez.
There's a controversial new sporting event launching. It's called the Enhanced Games. The name really suggests... I know where this is going.
This is what everyone in school was like, why doesn't this exist?
In school? What school did you go to? The Enhanced School of Surrey. It's basically a doping-friendly sports competition that's just had a bunch of money chucked behind it by some venture capitalists. Aussie Olympic swimmer James Magnussen says he would come on board as their first athlete. He even recently claimed, this is ridiculous, I'll juice to the gills in an attempt to break a world record and earn $1 million. That is quite clever, though, saying to the gills, because it's kind of implying that by doing the juice, he might develop gills.
Like X-Men.
Or like Kevin Costner in Waterworld. This is a film before both of your time. I
bet all he has to do is inject himself with fish DNA. I've watched Waterworld.
Have you?
Awful film though, isn't it?
What? It's absolutely incredible.
It's like a shit Mad Max, but water.
Oh, you're going to upset a lot of people. 3-time Olympic gold medal swimmer Liesl Jones has also come out saying she's not against the concept, suggesting it might actually keep clean sport clean.
It won't.
It won't. Surely if you want to cheat, the whole point is to get an advantage.
There's also been some backlash over safety concerns. UK Anti-Doping said a competition like this would be unsafe and dangerous to athletes' health. Meanwhile, the website for the Enhanced Games makes the extraordinary claim that the sports can actually be safer without drug testing. The blurb at the top of the site reads, when 44% of athletes already use performance enhancements, it's time to safely celebrate science. I do like the concept.
Do you think 44% is...
massively under, yeah. I like the idea of celebrating science because science is unbelievable and the stuff that it can achieve is incredible. But I just don't see how it is ever going to be possible to do it in a safe way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the bit that is like unbelievably concerning. So organizers say that the competition even will be the safest international sporting event in history, with competitors undergoing medical screening before competition. So I guess they're working on the basis that the medical screening will be the test to see if someone's healthy or not. I'm guessing they're not going to allow unhealthy people to compete. I don't know how they're planning to work that into it. The event would not be subject to World Anti-Doping Agency rules and any times will not be official. So I guess an event that we have seen over the last couple of years that have not been official world records have been the marathon world record attempts.
Where he's drafting...
with the special shoes.
Kipchoge. He drafted some people, didn't he? He was paced the whole way.
Well, yeah, but I think pacing and drafting is technically allowed in racing because you can obviously sit in a bunch.
Your competitor, but the people he was drafting, they would like switch out and stuff so they could run the same pace.
Yeah.
Whereas in a race, it's just the competitors you're allowed to draft. Otherwise, you get the Lou situation where you get people cheating and coming in who aren't actually in the event.
Yeah.
Whereas his one was people coming in specifically to run the pace he had to run.
Yeah, I guess that's an example of a space that... they set the fastest time ever, but it's not an official world record. So perhaps things like that are kind of what have inspired this. Like, what other options, what other things can be achieved? As I said earlier, I just don't see how it can be safe. I just feel like it's going to push people too far. And very quickly, there's going to be people dying or being seriously, seriously ill / injured. And then it's going to have to shut down, surely.
The name and the branding... when 44% of athletes already use performance enhancements, blah, 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 is pretty wild. It's like they are just...
I think the reason it'll have got good VC backing is people are going to watch it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to tune in even if I'm undecided on whether it's ethical.
But you can't look away.
Yeah, but I definitely couldn't look away.
Something I think I'm seeing more and more of recently, and I'm sure it's always been there, is this idea that... money is being put towards sporting events and trying to make the sporting events more exciting or have an angle. So I think one from maybe, 20 years ago or whatever, there was I can't remember what it's called. It's like the 50-50 cricket. They basically made a version of cricket that was much faster, and the idea is that it would be more exciting, and then tried to develop the game in a way that kind of made it more interesting for spectating. I guess it's normal. Formula One has changed loads of times. They've made changes again to try and make it a more exciting sport. Rugby has changed loads over the last few years because they're trying to make the game faster so that it's more entertaining and just keep the game flowing so that younger people are going to not switch out, which I guess is the opposite of a lot or a handful of American sports. Well, I guess most notably American football, because it is famously slow. You know, it takes 3-4 hours for a game to go through because there's so many starts and stops, whereas a lot of sport is trying to kind of make things more exciting faster.
People tried to do it in cycling, or they tried to try something new in cycling with Hammer Series. Right. Do you remember that?
Sounds familiar.
And it's like it was all a team-based thing where the team time trials, everyone was on the road at the same time and they were like overtaking each other, but they weren't allowed to draft each other, I'm sure. And it was very strange. But I never watched it. People who told me about it said it was really good and they were sad that it disappeared.
Well, I get top end competitive triathlon is kind of, well, sort of more in that space. What is really exciting about the triathlon stuff at that like elite Olympic level, Olympic distance, not Olympic as in the Olympics, is that drafting is legal. So you had drafting in the swimming, drafting on the bikes, drafting in the run. Yeah. And it was just such a wicked entertaining sport. It is really, really good.
The drug side of it's dodgy though, isn't it? A lot of these medicines that they're going to be taking, I was reading a thing about on the BBC and it was kind of saying, even if they have had clinical trials for their actual medical use, they haven't had clinical trials for what they are going to be used for.
Yeah.
And actually a lot of them haven't had any clinical trials. And surely there's going to be a lot of money involved with the people who are administering this doping. So I don't know, I feel like when money leads medicine, that's never a good thing either. I think the biggest problem they're going to have is actually getting people to sign up. Potentially ex-sports people who aren't in the limelight, but if you're a practicing pro sports person, are you going to go, yeah, I'll dope?
Well, no, they're not.
Because then the spotlight's kind of on you. You need either everyone to go at once so they have enough people to put this game on, or you open yourself up to potentially having the finger pointed at you. Oh, why are you so keen to dope?
I think it's almost never going to be existing.
You think it'll just be random people who...
Yeah, because bear in mind, once you do it, you can't go back. Well, I guess you'd have to repass tests. But ultimately, like, I think it's going to be people, I would imagine, that are at the latter end of their career, and there's the opportunity to make a big pot of cash, because if there's millions of dollars worth of prize money, then, you know, you might have spent your whole career on $200,000 a year, and you go, well, if I dope the hell out of myself for the next 2 years, I might get myself $2 million in 2 years.
This is it. You can imagine there'll be a lot of money behind it, because it's almost, it reminds me sort of the Jake Paul fighting competitions. They sell that pay-per-view and they make millions and millions per thing, because it's almost like you can't look away.
A spectacle, isn't
it? Yeah, it's a spectacle. And I imagine that, I mean, no linear traditional TV channel is going to take this on. You won't see it on the BBC, but it might be a pay-per-view thing on the internet that...
It will definitely be that.
...will make a substantial amount of money.
It reminds me a little bit of Isle of Man TT.
Yeah.
The same sort of person who would do it, as in you've been a... is it MotoGP?
I see where you're going.
So they start off with like the F1 version of motorbikes. Is it F1? Is it MotoGP? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I think so.
And then the riders who are getting close to the end of their career often start racing Isle of Man TT, which is a race around the Isle of Man.
It's incredibly dangerous, isn't it?
On normal roads, but at ridiculous speeds, and they have to get the turns down to an absolute perfect. But I think every year people die because it's so dangerous.
Chris Hall's dad has raced that.
He's raced that.
So Francis, you have long joked with me about getting a course of EPO. Now's your chance.
For clarification, I didn't actually do that.
No, but you've joked about wanting to do it.
No, I haven't.
Yes, you have, loads of times.
No, I've joked about Lawrence being put on EPO.
Lots of times you've said, wouldn't it be a great video series if I do a course of EPO and we'll see what happens. Well, you've been an elite
like
cyclist.
Like that guy from... What's it called? Icarus.
Yeah, we'll get you some EPO, we'll get you some test boosters, we'll get you on the enhanced games, and you'll win.
Perfect.
Million bucks. And you have to give it all to charity.
<I'm> sweet.
Otherwise, you're a monster.
I'm game. I was chatting to Lawrence about it, and you, about the conversation came up, which is what you're talking about, Icarus. There's a documentary on Netflix where a guy dopes for the Gran Fondo National Champs, I think it is, or Gran Fondo World Champs. It's not the official name. But he starts off as an okay amateur bike racer and tries to dope to get to a certain watts per kilo so he can win this thing. And then it ends up being the story twists and... am I spoiling the documentary for people
at home?
It's
been out a long time.
It's been out a long time. He ends up getting the help from a Russian doctor, and then he unveils this huge Russian doping scandal, and the documentary changes completely and they just focus on that. But you never saw really what was going to happen with the guy who was doping and documenting it. And I still think that's an interesting thing to experiment.
Yeah.
Not on me, please. Let's do it to Lawrence. For clarity, this is a joke. I wouldn't do it because you'd probably die. Like the people in these games might.
It's too unknown, isn't it? I remember listening to a Lance Armstrong documentary where when he finally came out and revealed that he was doping, and I'm sure he was asked, because he was taking hormones, testosterone and
growth hormone,
and he was talking about the possible links between that and his cancer. Obviously, it's not definitive, but hormones have a huge effect on your body as well. So it's just, you don't know, you have no idea what the actual effects of these things are going to be.
Short term
or long term.
Used to work as a lifeguard in a gym, and a load of the guys there would like be on steroids and stuff. And all of them now look back and go like, I wish I'd never done that.
Yeah.
Like they have lasting effects and it's just messed them up.
And this is it. There's a lot of ways to get money, and I'm sure it's hard if, you know, sport is your passion and you really want to make it your career, and someone's dangling a load of money at you to do something, you go, oh, F it, I'll do it. But there's a lot of dangerous ways to make money, which you might regret.
Fitness influencers as well.
That's a
totally. Because they have to, basically their job is to look fit.
Yeah.
And as we know, looking like an athlete for an extended period of time is not realistic. Like athletes, cyclists, it's a gravity sport, you've got to be lean, yeah. In the off season, no one stays that leanness because it's just not sustainable. Whereas whoever does fitness at, you know, on Instagram has to look ripped all the time. Well, I guess they edit the photos with Photoshop as well, but it's a weird but pressure.
Fantastically unhealthy.
Oh yeah, really bad.
Time for a round of overrated or underrated. I'm going to read out a list of things and you're going to tell me if you think they are overrated or underrated. First up is cycling specific glasses. So this is a suggestion by JJ, who says, as someone who wears prescription glasses, do I need cycling specific glasses? Does it keep my eyes from watering? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. I have ridden with non-cycling specific glasses loads of times, and I always end up with water streaming down my face or tears running down my face, and it's not because I'm suffering on the bike. The main reason I actually moved to cycling-specific glasses, and it's arguably for the same reason, but it's not, is about 8 years ago, I started completely randomly getting really bad hay fever that I never used to have.
I thought you were going to say that.
And yeah. I remember George Galbraith, our friend, was like, oh yeah, I get really bad hay fever. I always wear wraparound sunglasses because they stop pollen getting into my eyes. And I was like, oh, I guess I should buy some. And I bought a set and I still have them now. And I use them specifically for that reason. So generally in like winter or bad weather, in winter, I ultimately don't wear glasses that often. But if you are going to, will they stop your eyes from watering? Yes, if they're big wraparound ones.
You can get very cheap ones that don't look horrendous these days as well, which wasn't always the case. And with prescription glasses, they're glass. Were you doing me a secret signal then, eating your microphone, or was that just eating it? Yeah.
Oh, you mean as in like actual proper spectacles?
Yeah,
have glass
lenses. Okay, not everyone rides a bike the same way, but if I'm out on a road ride, I don't want glass on my face because if I did crash, slim chance, but it would shatter. Plastic is the purpose-made cycling glasses don't shatter.
I would say as a glasses wearer, prescription. I actually talked about prescription, different types of prescription glasses in an old episode. If you go to Cade Media Extra and scroll down, we put clips out and you'll be able to find one there. But prescription glasses are quite expensive. Most people I know and myself wear contact lenses with normal glasses over the top. If you're comfortable...
Cycling-specific glasses over the top.
Yes, exactly. If you're comfortable wearing contacts, perhaps do that and borrow someone's cycling glasses and see what it feels like. That's definitely going to give you... It's going to make your eyes water way less. But I have done rides with my normal glasses on and it is fine. It is fine. I would say I choose to wear cycling specific glasses more as a fashion thing rather than a comfort thing.
Can I say on that note, I choose to not wear cycling specific glasses as a fashion thing.
You want to wear Wayfarers?
I often wear just normal sunglasses. Mm. I probably shouldn't.
Yeah, I just want to blend in. You like to peacock, don't you?
You can get plasticky normal looking sunglasses. And then it's best of both worlds.
Yeah.
But the wind does go in.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, you'll get eye waters. Mm. Next up, pannier bags. This one was sent in by Hauk, who says, apart from the very good but really expensive tail fin products, I feel that trunk bags are often ridiculed in the community. For most, only a saddle bag counts, affectionately referred to as an arsh racket.
Arsh racket.
Arsh racket.
Which is arse rocket in German. However, these are usually cumbersome to pack. They wobble on the saddle, and when fully loaded, they're not so easily detachable. All fair points. Trunk bags, on the other hand, don't wobble, are easy to pack, can be easily detached, and still remain in the slipstream of the body. What do we think is the reason for their low popularity? Is it the luggage rack, additional cost, the massive marketing of saddlebags, aesthetic reasons, or there's simply a disadvantage to trunk bags that I'm not aware of? Thank you for the wonderful podcast. I always look forward to new episodes. Best regards from Leipzig. The road cycling world is obsessed with weight. Traditional pannier racks and panniers are typically very heavy and are often found on heavy touring bike setups. I have used a tail fin many times, and what I know about pannier bags is they are better than traditional bike mounted luggage. So I would always pick a pannier over a saddle bag if I was doing a long trip. If I could afford it, I would go for the lightest one I could get hold of, because in the grand, if it's going to save me 3 kilos, I'm going to be thankful of that when I'm riding up the climbs on my trip. If it's going to save me 500 grams, I'm not going to notice it. Saddlebags are trendy and fashionable, and bucket loads of marketing was thrown into them at various points because they allowed for lightweight packing of, at least in ultra marathon space. I don't know if it's the same with like TCR and things like that. Is there compulsory kit? You have to carry like a safety jacket and things like that.
Some of them, particularly in France, you have to have a
high-vis
something, yeah. Even if it's just like the straps that you wear on top of a jacket. Like they hand them out at the start of the races, so that's it.
I think one of the reasons they grew in popularity is you had the people that were getting attention from the old ultra-distance cycling events were the people that were doing it as fast as they possibly could, which meant they were carrying as little as they possibly could. So they wanted a tiny bag that meant that they could stuff a down jacket in and a sleeping mat so that they could just throw themselves on the side of the road. They didn't want an extra 5 kilos of luggage. They wanted to be light and efficient, but they wanted to carry more than what would fit in a jersey pocket. So I think you had these like people which were coming through 10 years ago, which were doing like really cool, interesting stuff that wanted really small luggage. I think a typical person on a bikepacking trip, it doesn't really make a difference. And you just use what you can afford and you like the look of. I think panniers are great.
For these fast people who, they're riding bikes without pannier racks on, without the mounts on.
Yeah.
So you have to use either a seat pack, one of these things that's a pain in the ass to pack and swings around, or later the tail fin, which is what came up. And that's a solution which is the kind of the best, but it is really expensive.
Again, well, ultimately, because they're prioritizing performance, therefore they want a fast bike, which typically isn't one which is loaded with rack mount.
Yeah, typically a bike with mounts will be a steel frame, a bit heavy.
There'll be editions of TCR where people are riding like full on like aero road bikes.
Carbon frames, yeah.
I would say even outside of that though, if you're coming to cycling from a road cycling background, you probably got a bike that doesn't fit pannier racks. If you come to it specifically from a touring bike, you might have that. But say if you've only got one road bike and your mate goes, oh, I want to start bike packing or whatever, then you're not going to go out and buy a touring bike. So you do with what you've got.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true as well. Yeah.
That's why I ended up using the tail fin.
Yeah.
I still to this day don't have a bike with proper pannier mounts on.
Yeah. And you because of the stuff that you do, you needed space to be able to fit a large laptop.
Yeah.
So you had to have
the pannier ones.
A pannier, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the only option available. So what are we saying? Overrated or underrated?
Underrated.
Underrated as well. I agree with you. Next, we have two suggestions from Sam. The first one is loud free hubs.
Underrated.
Overrated. I hate loud free hubs.
I use it instead of a bell, but it's less aggressive to the... Okay, so if you use a bell, if you're riding down a path here...
That's so passive aggressive, it's unbelievable.
And you ring a bell, the people either go... Well, they hate you for having a bell and they hate you for not having a bell, so you can't win. Whereas if you have a free hub that's clicky, everyone knows you're coming and then they move out of the way and they just because they can hear you. That's it.
I think there's a third option, which is what I use, which I go, hello, passing on the left, or hello, passing on the right.
And then they go, why haven't you got a bell? They go, oh,
no, they
why
don't.
Haven't you got a bell?
That's never happened.
I have had that hundreds of times.
It's because you're clearly buzz pasting them and then saying it.
No,
as you're
I'm shouting early so they can hear me. And then they're wondering, and they go, oh, and they're shocked, and they wonder why they're being shouted at.
You
and
have
they're
to
like,
keep saying it. You can't
try and get a bell. You're like,
you can't
bell
shout it from 50 meters away and then buzz past them and then be like, oh, I told
there
you 50
meters
away.
There is no buzzing happening.
Unbelievable.
I'm just telling you my experience. I've done a lot of riding on the off-road paths around here, and that is the clicky free hub solves the problem. Underrated.
Electric cars. No, nothing to add.
I don't drive.
I want to say they are massively underrated. They are. So we have an electric car and a not electric car, and the electric car is unbelievably amazing to drive. I know a lot of there's a lot of this kind of like anti-electric car movement, but people are going to have cars, so surely an electric car is a better option than a not electric car in the grand scheme of things. I don't know enough about the science, but as a vehicle to drive, they're great.
It would be. I hope technology keeps getting better so drivers know on their screen. Like, so I was in LA, everything is a Tesla. So you get an Uber and 9 times out of 10, it's a Tesla. And you can see on their iPad in the middle of their car, it beeps and tells you there's a cyclist on the screen and people and all sorts. So I assume more sensors is better. As long as it's not a distraction.
It's not an electric
car. The giant iPad with Spotify on it in the middle of the car is a distraction though. Yeah. So there needs to be some sort of rules put in place there. There's also fully driverless cars driving around LA.
Is there?
Yeah. So you're riding along and then there's a driverless, there was two near each other.
And they had a drag race.
Well, they drive really slowly around. Like they're obviously not letting them go on any fast roads, but that's weird.
There was a video which hit the news/social literally a couple of days ago actually about this. It was, I think it was in San Francisco, and there was, is it Chinese New Year? Or was it recently Chinese New Year?
Year of the Dragon.
So I think it was a celebration for that, and there was a driverless car, which was a taxi, was trying to go down one of the procession roads, and a group of people were really angry by it. Not just, I think they were just like skater kids, and they smashed the car up and then set it on fire. And I was just like, what the hell? They've literally just set a taxi on fire. And then it said this was a driverless vehicle with no one in. I was like, what? So I think it was anti-driverless vehicles was the sentiment.
That does seem scary.
I know when we've talked about electric cars before, we've had a couple of comments. We must have said that they were more sustainable or whatever. And people were saying in the comments, they're not more sustainable because you plug them in, it goes off your electricity, which is still burnt off fossil fuels. But I guess, number one, you can get green. You can go with green companies, can't you, that use renewable energy?
Yeah, a lot of companies now have either 100% renewable tariffs. Some companies
at least
have
in this
only
country. 100%.
Yeah, in the UK. There's a handful which are 100% renewable. There's some which have renewable tariffs, and there's obviously some which still are just not. But I think if you look into it, a lot of them, at least at the minute or more recently, even the ones that are not renewable ones have a large proportion of renewable energy as part of them.
Yeah.
In this country.
Yeah. You could also, if you're that way inclined, have your own solar panels and charge it off. There are sustainable options for powering your vehicle, whereas I guess the difference is with petrol or diesel, there is no sustainable way to power it.
There's a lot of people questioning the battery side of stuff as well.
Right.
Producing a battery, the life of a battery.
But there's a battery in a normal car.
Not comparable in terms of the resources required to produce it.
Mm.
Mining lithium, isn't it?
There's not even, some of them aren't. I think there's another thing as well, which they are. It's not just lithium.
Mm.
But ultimately, battery technology is something that people are concerned about with sustainability, because I think you also get to a point where it's effectively landfill. But then all cars are ultimately end up as ultimate.
I feel like we're not qualified to talk
absolutely
on this,
not.
Are we?
Absolutely not.
Let's do the next one. Oh, wait, that's the end.
Thank goodness.
Keep sending your suggestions to wildonespodcast@cademedia.co.uk and we might read yours out in the next show. Next up, we have Fluff Up of the Week. Have you read this yet, Francis? So,
this is your fault.
No, it's not.
Well, you, one, this is your fault, and we're going to settle things once for all.
So, whilst you're away, you dropped the first edition of the Van Rysel video, where we got a Van Rysel from Decathlon. It is a sponsored video. And the first video, you out in LA, your first ride, first thought, some specs on the bike. And for some reason, you told the world that you are significantly taller than you actually are, and people called you out for it.
You measured me.
Yeah, I measured you at 5'7". So why did you say 5'10"?
Let's measure me now. Let's do it. Right, what was that?
You must have got a dodgy tape measure from somewhere. So that suggested that you were 5'9.5".
Okay, so you measured me in the studio.
5'7".
At 5'10", when we were together, because I questioned it when we were... So I was at a party in LA, and people were like, for some reason we started, it was like 2 a.m., so you're just doing weird stuff, and we measured each other's height.
Yeah.
And I was 5'9", and I was like, how was Jimmy an inch wrong? Like, that is... ridiculous. He wouldn't have. I know he's I know you're so small that it was quite hard for you to see the reading, but an inch is a big difference. And I googled, because I had have this thing in my brain of James. I filmed so many Bike Fit Tuesdays episodes with a bike fitter called James Thomas, and he has this thing where he's like, saddle height, what's the point? There's no point in being millimeter perfect with your saddle height, because you're taller in the morning when you wake up than when you go to bed at night. I googled that. And it's true. Up to a centimeter different by lunchtime, and up to 3 centimeters by the end of the day, depending on who you are. It's just different for everyone. So I'm 5'10 when I wake up. I'm 5'9 at 2 a.m.
So
because your spine, like, there's just things that compress and you end up shorter.
What time of day was it when I measured you at 5'7" then?
Early. It was the first thing in the morning here. Oh, no.
You missed 5'9".
I'd been awake 50 hours.
So I guess the context of this conversation is that you said 5'10".
What was I then?
What, just then?
Yeah, just then.
5'9.5.
5'9.5.
Halfway through the day.
And it's 1 o'clock, yeah. There you go. and also an inch is 2.5 centimeters. So that it does, it's in line with what Google says.
So you said you were 5'10" and you got the extra small bike, and people were like, how can you be 5'10" and get an extra small bike? And I think, so firstly, you exaggerated your height, as we've now established. Secondly,
have we? By half a centimeter. No.
Half an inch.
I think the other bit which is missing from that as a piece of information, which you actually probably should have said in the video, is you and I like to ride aggressive bikes. So although you are 5'10" and riding an extra small...
No, I physically couldn't ride the small. Too long. It's a centimeter too long for me. And a centimetre of reach is a f***ing lot of reach.
Not if you ride it at 2 a.m. because you're shorter then.
No, no, no. In the morning.
That'd be even worse.
In the morning, oh. It's fine.
In the morning, I'll be fine. I can ride it for about an hour and a half before I'm too short.
This is my morning bike. This is my evening bike.
As I have learnt through filming a video with James, which is unreleased, about endurance bikes and the geometry of those endurance bikes from all the big brands, a lot of brands don't make a bike which is suitable for people if you're less than, if you're 5'8" or less, you have very limited choice, even in endurance bikes, let alone race bikes. And the Van Rysel is a race bike made for athletes.
The RCR is, yeah.
The RCR Pro. They make an endurance version. They make an endurance road bike now, which we haven't seen. I haven't actually, like, I haven't even seen the PDF. They sent us some sneaky PDFs of future things.
Well, no, no, I think it's an existing bike.
Is it?
Yeah, so I think the RCR is an update on an old Van Rysel bike. I don't think it's a brand new bike.
Yeah.
I think it's just a new version of it.
If it's similar, so there's going to be a video with James where we cover this, and actually the lower end Triban that we looked at the geometry chart for was really good. It's one of the endurance bikes which is short enough for people, and I hope the higher end one that you're talking about there has the same geometry.
No idea.
But at the end of the day, it's, you know, the race bike's a race bike.
Now for some more listeners takeover. Hi all, I just wanted to say a massive thank you for raising the issue of men's health, especially mental health. Everything you said rang very true with my own recent issues, and more needs to be done in the media to keep people aware of what's out there. Back in September last year, I was on a sun lounger by a pool in Tunisia when all of a sudden I started to cry. I thought nothing of it until I was back in the UK and driving home from my first day back at work. Suddenly I thought, how much of a car crash do I need to have to not go to work? I was completely shocked by this and realized something was wrong. I spoke to my partner, friends and boss, and then contacted my GP. The NHS were very quick to get me an assessment and the support I needed. Having since been diagnosed with depression and anxiety, I feel I have been very fortunate to have such good support. Not everyone is as lucky as me, and your podcast is doing a great job at spreading the word. Thank you, Andy.
Thanks, Andy. I feel like what he's saying thank you to is you guys while I was away.
Well, no,
because you had some really good chats with Nick and
Pete
as well.
We talk about mental health and health in general a lot. It's very consistent through lots of conversations that we've had since day one in the podcast. There's loads of conversations, little bits that we've added, and I think it is really important. I've had comparable experiences to Andy, and when your brain does weird things, it's terrifying because you start to feel like you're losing control, and that is a horrible, horrible, horrible feeling to have. And it's really nice to hear a success story with the NHS as well, because I have heard not success stories, so it's nice to hear that they are helping people.
Yeah, good on you for doing something about it, and glad you're feeling better.
Yeah. Thank you, Andy. Thank you all for listening. Keep sending your emails to wildonespodcast@cademedia.co.uk. We love to read them. That's all for this week. If you're listening, leave us a 5-star review. If you're watching, leave us a like and comment, and remember to subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. Thank you, and see you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach.
Give me great food.
Tacos.
Give me adventure.
Hiking.
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise.
Give me some smiles.
Cheese.
Give me more beaches.
Beaches.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.